Hello and welcome to The Future Report, a podcast hosted by social research company McCrindle for anyone curious about the future. My name is Ashley Fell, and each week I'll be sitting down with a guest to discuss a topic or trend that you need to know about. As 2023 draws to a close, it's worth taking the time to reflect on the year that has been. From demographic changes to social trends, consumer shifts and technological transformations, we're discussing some of the memorable things that we've lived through in 2023. And to help me do that in today's episode is McCrindle's Managing Director, Sophie Renton. Soph, great to have you back on the Future Report podcast.
Thanks, Ash. Delighted to jump in and talk about all things 2023 today.
It's always, I think this is maybe our third time doing this episode, like, because we've done it for the last couple of years, the year in review. And even though we're a podcast that talks about the future, this is one of my favorite episodes to record. It's really fun to just sit back at the end of a year and reflect. And even as I was prepping for this, there were things that I was like, was that really this year? Like, some things felt like they were 3 years ago. Other things felt like they were only yesterday, but they're at the beginning of the year. Like, it's just time's kind of warped. At all times, a bit of a construct, but it definitely comes through when you reflect on things about 2023. So if, as you reflect on the year that's been, are there any personal and professional highlights that come to mind for you?
I had a lot of actual personal and professional highlights that came to mind when I sat down to think about it. A personal highlight, I think, was spending 5 weeks in Europe. Wasn't too shabby in the middle of the year. Doing a 100-kilometer hike, part of the Camino Way, going to Marrakesh, adventuring. That was amazing. But professionally, I think it's been a really great year as well. I just got back from New Zealand doing a roadshow for a client there, 4 cities across 4 different days. So it was a big trip, but it's always so much fun to get out there and share the insights that we've collected. And, you know, we're all about beautiful insights, better outcomes, leaving this world in a better place than how we found it, using data to help people understand what's going on. And I just always find that such a great privilege. So that was probably one of my highlights, alongside just the team. I love our team. I'm sure anyone who's listened to any podcast, because I'm always here talking about the team or the future of work, thinking back on our key team retreats this year, gathering everyone in January and then again in the middle of the year. There's always great times for conversations, investment, growth, connection. Those are probably a few of my personal and professional highlights.
Yeah, it's I had the privilege as well. I didn't do the 100-kilometer walk of the Camino Way, or I didn't go to Marrakesh, but I did go to Europe for only 2 weeks this year. And it was interesting. I remember like this time last year, or just reflecting, you know, travel was like only just back after the pandemic, but I'm sure you felt it too. You were there in the peak of summer, which is just the best time to go. And I was there a bit earlier in the year, but like Europe and travel, you know, mid-year break was back in a big way. Everyone in my life, it seemed, was overseas during July of this year, when we're in the depths of winter here in Australia, but overseas it's summer. So it's lovely to have that come back, especially after the last couple of years, which is fantastic. And yeah, like you said, Soph, I think it's such a privilege for us to be going out and speaking at conferences that, again, they've also just been back in a really big way this year, which our team love to be a part of. So a lot to be thankful for as we reflect on this year professionally. And speaking of that, you mentioned the insights there that we conduct. We, of course, that's a big part of why we exist here at McCrindle. We've conducted a lot of research this year and a lot of events, virtual events and, of course, in-person events that we've been out and about speaking at. So if I'd love to hear from you, because you play a big role in our internally driven thought leadership pieces, I'm always curious to hear which ones you enjoyed most or you found most intriguing or most fascinating. What's been memorable for you when you think about the year of research that we've just come out of?
I think for me this year, the 7 disruptors impacting the future of education was a really big report. Doing in-depth interviews with key educational leaders, getting their insight on the future of education, the challenges of today, was a really privileged piece of work. And then a survey of teachers and finding out that like 2/3 of teachers have considered leaving the teaching profession, and just the real challenge and pressure that puts on the whole area and then all the different insights and trying to compile them up. That was a challenging one, but a really fun one. And I've loved then being able to jump into the boardrooms with different schools and unpack that and then go, okay, well, how do we respond? Where to next? What does that look like? How do we de-risk ourselves to embrace the future? So that's probably one of them. And then the other one that I think I really loved, which you actually authored, was the Generations Defined report. We love investigating the generations, finding out where they're similar, where they're different. And I think a key stat from that one that I love is just the amount of feedback Gen Z are looking for in the workplace, both positive but also constructive, and just how that is so much more than the other generations. Because I think when we understand our teams, we know how to lead them better and we know how to engage with them better. So those were a couple that I loved. But what about you? You're out presenting all the time. What have been some of the stats that you've loved sharing this year?
Yeah, I think the whole Generations Defined report was a really interesting one. I mean, a lot of people would know from our presentations, from our content, even from this podcast, that the generations is something that we love to talk about, that and it permeates everything that we do. But I think particularly that report just being unashamedly like, let's just deep dive into every generation. And to see, for me, I think, you know, we looked at generations as consumers and as employees, and there were some really interesting insights, like you said there, about Gen Z and that they want, you know, praise and feedback and how much more they need that than other generations. We looked at where each generation goes to find community, which was fascinating. But the one that I think is also fascinating is that it's the Gen Ys across all the generations. It's the Gen Ys who most want flexible working conditions in places of employment, which I think is a bit of a counterintuitive maybe response or insight, because I think a lot of people just think, oh, Gen Z as the youngest who've grown up in flexible working conditions are the ones who would most want it. But it's actually the Ys who've got kids and who've got competing priorities and busy lives and that life stage. And so I've enjoyed sharing that because it feels like a bit of a shock to people. They're like, oh, I wasn't going to, you know, hypothesize that, or I wasn't expecting that to be the insight. So love a little shock factor involved in presenting and challenging people's, you know, perceptions or hypotheses. So, but that report is amazing, and we've got all these infographics that have come out of it. So people should definitely keep their eye out for those as we release more of those. But Soph, I'd love to now delve into, again, like, it was almost when I was putting this together, I was like, where does one start with, you know, summarizing the year? But I did see, and I know that you saw this as well, over the last couple of weeks, ANU released their Word of the Year, which very fittingly is Matilda. Now, for those of us in Australia, I have no doubt that we would all know that that word is a celebration of the Matildas, which is Australia's national women's soccer team, as they've received very appropriate widespread coverage, celebration and adoration by people all over the world, including one Ashley Fell, following their 2023 FIFA World Cup performance, which was hosted in Australia. They're playing, I think, in the moment at the Olympic qualifiers, and I was out for lunch with a friend on Saturday and I was like, oh, I've got to get home by 3 o'clock to watch the Matildas. She's like, what? Like, the World Cup's finished. I was like, I know, but they're still playing and I love them and I can name all of the players and I'm such a fangirl. And it was just such a fun time, I think, to be a woman, even in Australia, just celebrating these, I think, really humble but confident, like, great sportswomen and just ambassadors on that global stage for our country, and to see men and women celebrating them and going to places to watch the games. It was just such a vibe and it was really fun. And they did so well, I guess, as a performance, but also how they carried themselves off the field. And I was loving their social media activity and just the behind the scenes. So as I said, I'm a full-on Matildas fangirl now. But Soph, I wanted to get your reflections on that. I know but our listeners don't know, in terms of what kind of impact you think, you know, that kind of phenomenon had on our nation, that is the Matildas, that is the ANU Word of the Year.
Yeah, I think it went a really long way for putting women's sport on the map, both in Australia and globally. It shifted it into a recognition that it's something worth watching, and that people started to shift that conversation of, oh, I'm watching the game. And the question is now not just assume that it's a men's game. It's like, oh, which one? And I think the Matildas should be so proud of themselves for that, that they did so well on the sporting arena. But broader than that, they really shifted a public perception. And I think that's a lasting heritage that they can hold on to, and a legacy that has been incredible. And, you know, the watch parties, they were amazing. The points of gathering. And what I think, as I reflect probably at that deeper level, is that it really gave Australia as a nation something to unite around, which has been really special in a year that at different times has been quite polarizing and almost divisive. But just the power of sport and being able to unite and believe in something and stand together and just rebuild some of those community moments, I think has been a really beautiful thing for 2023.
Yeah, it was definitely something that was much needed, I think, for our nation and across the world in times of some turmoil as well for people individually. And we'll get to some of those impacts, you know, even economically. And just, yeah, it was a great thing to experience and to have. Some of the other social events from 2023 that I think are noteworthy, and I did a bit of research when compiling this episode, so I've got a bit of a list, and there may be a bit of a recurring theme, which the listeners and yourself might realize as I read them out. So some of the noteworthy things: we had the Barbie Oppenheimer kind of dual release date, two very large movies culturally this year, very different in their vibe and messaging. We had Rihanna performed at the Super Bowl, which in my head, I'm like, that feels like it was 3 years ago. That really iconic dance that she did with like those people that look like marshmallows. Anyway, if you know the performance, you know what I'm talking about. We had the iconic Taylor Swift launch the Eras Tour. We had Beyonce launch her Renaissance World Tour. And it feels like it's just the year of the girls with all of these things. And also the year of live music being back after years of not being able to tour, and even part of Taylor Swift's kind of, I mean, we could have a whole episode on that. It's not the purpose of this podcast, but there's lots of podcasts that delve into that. But even the fact that she couldn't tour for the last few years and she's released so many albums in that time is part of why she's got the Eras Tour. Like, it's almost like an impact of the pandemic that she hasn't had these individual album launches. So kind of culminating in these massive world tours for these big artists because they haven't been able to tour for the last few years. As we think about some of the influential figures that we have lost this year, The ones that I was looking at in the research, the big names that stood out to me were Tina Turner and more recently Matthew Perry, which definitely seemed to have a big impact. And yeah, we've also seen just this week, actually, the different dictionaries release some of their words of the year. So if I wondered if you could talk our listeners through some of those terms and just what they reveal about the year that we've lived through and the society and some of the trends that have impacted us this year.
Yeah, we love the words of the year at McCrindle. Often our presentations are introduced with them just to give that context in a really high-level way how our world is changing. Because the words of the year, so often they just capture a snapshot of the sentiment or the theme. What's been really interesting, though, of recent years with the Oxford Dictionary particularly is that there's been more public involvement in the selection process. And I will leave it up to you whether you think that's a good idea or a bad idea. But the Oxford Dictionary's word for the year this year was Riz. And when I heard that, I was like, huh, okay, where's that come from? And the word of the year for the Oxford Dictionary last year was Goblin Mode, which similarly I had a perception of like, oh, okay, it's not, I guess, everyday language that I would use, but it's quite Gen Z leaning, the Oxford Dictionary. It's embracing the next generation, giving an opportunity for people to poll and to lean into that. What's quite interesting is the Collins Dictionary has a bit of a different lens on it. Of last year, they had the word permacrisis, which I think is one that we could all feel with the unrest around the world and the challenges coming out of COVID. And this year for Collins Dictionary, the word of the year is AI. And I think that comes as absolutely no surprise to anybody that the, you know, artificial intelligence, the whole conversation around that this year. So there's two different dictionaries of the year giving their words of the year, and they're two very different realms, which I think is actually uncovers something else in our society, that we've got these really rich, complex conversations happening, and then there's almost this that's all a little bit too hard, so I'm going to go in the lighthearted realm. But what's been your reflections, Ash, as you've heard these come out this year?
Yeah, I was surprised to hear that it was Riz. I was less surprised than Goblin Mode. When Goblin Mode got announced last year, I was like, I've never heard that, whereas I've definitely heard Riz. And our listeners of the podcast hopefully have heard Riz because we did talk about it in the Gen Z slang episode, or not just slang, but I think it was in the head of Gen Z with Holly and Luke from our team. They were quizzing me on the terms and Riz was there, and you know, we've made jokes about it in the office as well. So it's definitely a term, whereas Goblin Mode, I was like, this feels so niche. But it's fascinating because, yeah, it does seem like there's a bit of a shift away from that kind of what's impacting everyone. Like, I think all generations have been impacted by AI, and that was my hypothesis, that something about AI or ChatGPT was going to be the word of the year for, I guess, Oxford. But, yeah, to see them kind of swing quite heavily to a term that only really applies to probably, like, people under 30 or maybe even under 25, like, it's a really, like, very specific kind of Gen Z slang. But I guess it is a new term that's gained popularity. I did hear as well, I think with the Oxford, so we're talking about with our colleagues, again, to go back to Taylor Swift, that Swiftie was also one of the words that they were like considering or made the shortlist, which just again shows like how dominant Taylor Swift is in pop culture / the world at the moment. But yes, it's fascinating. I do think, and just for those who don't know, by the way, I thought I would include a definition of Riz. So it's a noun that means style, charm, attractiveness, or the ability to attract a romantic partner. And Oxford has said that Riz is basically a shortened form or iteration of the word charisma. So that's just a bit of background for people who are like, what is Riz? And so, yeah, I think it is interesting, though, as it evolves and as it, changes and accommodates a younger population. But, I mean, there were some other shortlisted words as well. I think you and I were just discussing this offline. Greedflation, I think the Collins Dictionary had put in there. Do you have any reflections on that word, Soph, particularly in what that means about all of the different, I guess, economic things or trends that have permeated this year?
Yeah, there's a lot of different economic trends that have permeated this year. And I think greedflation, that concept that, you know, that inflation is really just there to increase the profits of the wealthy. And it, to me, what it uncovers is this increased skepticism occurring across our society and this growing divide a little bit between the haves and the have-nots and just how we reconcile that as a society and if we're okay with that, and just the commentary around that, I think, is really interesting and something to stay on top of. Alongside greedflation, there was also de-influencing was another word that came into the shortlist, and that was more when you're influencing, but almost for the negative way of saying don't use this because of XYZ. So I think, yeah, it's been a really interesting year. A lot of different new words coming into the vocabulary of many people and some interesting underlying themes that those words represent.
Yeah, absolutely. Another area that, of course, we must talk about because everyone knows that we love it, and we won't spend too long on it because we've done whole episodes on different themes that have gone on this year, but demographics is probably an area that many people overlook, but not us, because we know that it has big impacts, and it is an area that we study and talk about a lot. So if what demographic trends from the past year stand out to you in particular?
Yeah, well, we can't go past that our population growth rebound and migration as the borders have opened, that we've got international students coming in, that we've really, the Australian economy is kind of relifting again with that population growth. So I think that is a key demographic trend. Putting on our generational hat, the fact that it's next year is the last year of Generation Alpha being born, and that Gen Alpha reached being teenagers this year. So they had their first year in high school. I think those are really interesting demographic shifts, and just that intergenerational transfer of knowledge, of wealth, of responsibility that we continually keep seeing are some really interesting trends to keep watching.
Yeah, absolutely. And people might recall as well one of our more recent episodes from this latest season where we talked about even the role of grandparents and how they're stepping up with regards to specifically a study we did for Futurity Investment Group, which was about them helping with the cost of education. So yeah, that wealth transfer already starting to play out across the oldest members of our society, transferring their wealth directly to the youngest, which is fascinating to think about and extrapolate over the future as well. We've touched on, again, a few economic trends already, and there were many highs in 2023 and some social and pop culture ones that are really fun and easy to talk about, but also some very sobering, I guess, global coverage of course, inflation and cost of living crisis, but also just more globally, I guess, the Russia-Ukraine war that we've had, you know, over the last year and even beyond. But then this year, it definitely seems, again, not that it's just begun this year, but it's definitely, it seems anyway, in terms of the news coverage that we see around the Israel-Hamas war, just in terms of things really escalating over the last couple of months, particularly, which has been quite hard to reconcile. And like anything, when you see something that feels like you're watching, you know, a history lesson or something that you learn about that happened years ago, not happening across the other side of the world or in parts of the world today. So it's, again, almost a sign of privilege probably that we are so far removed from it, but it's something that has happened in our world this year. It's also been another year of tough economic conditions with rising interest rates. I should fact check this before I say it, but I did read somewhere that I think it's been 14 interest rate rises, maybe not this year especially, but in recent times. So it's been a lot, and we've surveyed people in Australia, and we have you know, investigated the impact of that on them. So we've definitely seen that. But how do you think this is all of these kind of more sobering economic and global trends, how have they impacted people in your view as a social researcher, Soph?
Yeah, I think there is a sense of people feeling fatigued and a bit weary and not quite sure how to respond in these times. People want to respond well, but they don't necessarily know what the best way is for that, particularly as we think about global unrest. Yes, we are removed in Australia, but how do we not ignore that? But where do we lend our voice? How do we stand for some change that we say that this isn't okay, but what's within our power to be able to do? And I think that can create a level of kind of helplessness across society, which is not a great place to stay for too long, and that almost tension, we love the word tension, between what they see and what they feel is in their power to be able to do. And then you throw in cost of living and the challenges back home. And for some, that is definitely more challenging than others around how they navigate that. And particularly as the Christmas season comes up and there are significant costs that come there. But I think as I step back and think as a social researcher around, okay, there's global challenge, there's global unrest, that people are finding it hard. But at these challenging times in life, we often see the best and the worst of humanity. And I guess it's that challenge to each one of us to go, okay, how in this moment do I look back on my life and go, no, I actually brought my best self into this in the way that I could at that time? How do we lift our eyes off our own situation and, you know, at Christmas invite someone else around, even though it might be challenging for us? How do we do that in a way that can reduce our cost? Say, everyone bring a plate. Like, how do we share that burden? Like, there's so many creative ways that we can choose to bring out the best in people in this moment. And I think that's something that's well within our power to be able to do. And so how do we do that?
Yeah, a great reflection and a great challenge as well for us. So thank you. Moving on to technology, and of course, it's always advancing and it can definitely be hard to keep up. But at the beginning of the year, we did see in 2023 a big shift in the technology we use with the introduction of ChatGPT into our lives. We have done a few episodes on the impact of AI, and it's been a big disruptor in our Future of Education report. Of course, it features so much in all of our writing, and it has actually, I think, at MacCrindle, it's featured in our trends for the last few years. We know that AI has been probably working in the background and working behind the scenes, but now it's definitely, I think the shift has occurred where it's really in the consumer's hands to use and to be aware of and to utilize. How do you think this shift has impacted our world and as we look to the future even, Soph, how do you see that shaping the lives of younger generations, and especially, I guess, particularly the question we get asked a lot is, and I'm sure you get asked a lot as well for your expertise, is even how we work and the impact on the future of work there?
I think that's the element, is how AI and ChatGPT impacts the future of work. There is a fear of, does it take away jobs, or is it actually that those jobs you can leverage with AI. And I think what we'll see into the future is that sense of the people that know how to engage well with AI are the ones that will set themselves apart. It's not that AI is coming to take all of our jobs. It might take some, but it's just the jobs of the future will look different. Like I often use in my prezos that like two different slides, an old job of a professional, like I can't remember the term, like door knocker, but like a waker-upper. They used to go around and knock on the windows as a human alarm clock for people. That seems absolutely outrageous to us today. And, you know, then we shifted to the analog alarm clock, and then now we have our phone that has everything in this one device. And I think we're in this moment of shift where it can be hard to let things go. But in the future, we'll look back and be like, oh my goodness, why did someone actually even do that manually? So there's a lot of opportunity. There's a lot of excitement around it. I think what I find ChatGPT super helpful for is just removing that blank page feeling, just to get it started, get the ball rolling. And then you can craft, shape, shift it and grow from there. So I think the way that AI is impacting is those that know how to partner well with it will stand out in the future.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I read something the other day. Someone was just probably sharing something on LinkedIn, and they were just talking about how, you know, in the next few years, or maybe even at the moment, like kids just using ChatGPT to do assignments will become like the norm. And because at the moment where we're working out all of the conversations around ethics and plagiarism and responsibility and impact on research and laziness and critical thinking, like all of these things that it's really important for us to be thinking about and us to be talking about and evaluating, but still that reality of it's just going to become a part of that everyday life. So yeah, it's interesting as we think about the future. And like you said, yeah, definitely those who have an openness to it and who can upskill and equip themselves, because I think they will become the ones in organizations who people look to and very quickly become very valuable people who go, oh yeah, this is how you can gain time back or increase your productivity by using this particular AI or whatever it might be. So yeah, fascinating times ahead. And as we do think to the future, we will be hosting an event in February 2024, which is not very far away. We're already busy behind the scenes, you and I especially, Soph, kind of working through some of those insights and those trends to launch at our Trends of 2024 virtual event next year. So if people are interested, keep an eye out for that. We'll be advertising where people can purchase tickets to kind of watch that hour or 90 minute virtual event with some discussion and breakout groups in there. So if you love this discussion today, if you love thinking about the future, please do come along. We'd love to have you at that and engage with you. But without giving away too much, Soph, is there a particular trend or a topic or a theme that you're keeping your eye on as you think about, you know, the year ahead as we look to 2024?
Yeah. I love people and I love community. And so the one that's on my radar is this silent pandemic of loneliness, which is growing in Australia and I think around the world as well, that, you know, more than half of Australians often or sometimes feel lonely. And for Gen Z, that goes up to 75%. So there is this sense of people, whilst having the illusion of connection through the digital and online communities, how does that translate into real community? And how is we, as a society, how can we combat that? How can we rebuild hubs of community? How can we re-engage people in community, letting them feel seen, known, valued, understood, that, you know, level of vulnerability? There's a lot of things that come into play. And I think when we are healthy and we bring our best selves and we're surrounded in flourishing community, that has positive impacts in every single area of our lives. So that's one that I'm watching, just because I think the flow-on impact of that is significant across society and across the globe.
Yeah, it's huge. And I saw just only recently, actually in the last month, that the World Health Organization has launched a commission to foster social cohesion and address loneliness as a pressing health threat, which, again, we're going to kind of explore that a little bit more, I think, as we look at the impact of that on people and how they engage in community and social connection. It's something that we have been monitoring just so of interest because we're social beings and we're social researchers and it relates to so much connection, work, health, sleep, all of it. And so we've been monitoring that for a while, but even just to see the impacts even of the pandemic and generational differences around how Gen Z engage and Gen Alpha engage in community compared to older generations. And so it's just, it's really, it's fascinating, but it's also has huge impacts on people's lives. So definitely a really important one to be thinking about. But that brings us to the end of the episode. So thank you so much for the chat today, Soph. Thanks for coming on and having that daunting task of just recapping the whole year. Of course, we didn't recap everything, but we gave it a red hot go in terms of some of those areas of mega trends that we love to operate in, from demographics to economic, global, social, generational insights. So thanks so much for your time, Soph. Really appreciate it.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me, Ash.
And if you would like to stay up to date with McCrindle's latest insights, you can always subscribe to the podcast. You can follow us on social media or you can head to McCrindle.com. But also just to let everyone know that this is our final episode for the season, final episode for the year. We'll have a brief break over Christmas and New Year and we'll be back in your ears for another season in 2024. So as always, thank you again for listening. Have a great, very Merry Christmas and New Year and bye for now.